All right, so we're back. We're going to switch gears here in a big way. And that's where we're going to talk to Alp Grouse and Pierre Outerbridge, founder and the owner of the New York City-based law firm Outerbridge Law, and a practice focused on landlord-tenant litigation, transactional matters. She's going to lay it out for us as far as rights, property rights, and talking about from a tenant's standpoint, as a tenant's attorney, as she is. She will, I'm sure, meticulously defend against unnecessary evictions. And that's something else we're going to talk about because August 31st looms large. And we welcome Alta Gracia to the program. Great to have you, Alta Gracia. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Jay. Thank you for having me.
It is a pleasure. I want to start in Surfside. I was reading, Alta Gracia, a judge down in Florida said the survivors and victims' family in the condo building collapse, they're going to get a minimum now, folks, of $150 million in compensation initially. And that includes, I guess, insurance, Alta Gracia, on the tower, and expected proceeds from a sale of the empty property. But very interesting there, and I can only think that that is just the start of it all. I mean, you're talking numbers we have not seen ever, I would think, after that happened, or, you know, and what will come into the courts after that horrendous deal. What are your thoughts on that as far as an attorney standpoint when you read this stuff?
Well, Jay, I'll say that that's a great question. I would say that $150 million is not nearly enough, right? At least 97 folks have died. Their families are grieving. What I've found, what I'm reading is that $50 million, the condo board was only insured for $50 million. The $100 million is coming from the sale of the building where it stood, right? So $150 million won't be enough. There's a lot of talk as to where the rest of the money will come from to compensate these victims. So we can go down a deep hole on that, but if $150 million is not enough, maybe the state of Florida will have to become an additional insurer, right, to make it fair. But more money needs to be found for these victims.
What about, you know, listen, all of these reports, Alta Gracia, regarding inspections and, you know, dates and 40-year type deals down there. And, you know, these buildings, you know, when you think about it, they're near the ocean, the salt and everything else, the air, you know, it gets into the infrastructure and everything else. And, you know, again, until we get a final report as far as what happened there over at that tower, the Chamblee Tower there, a South Tower, you know, we're not going to know for sure, but when you hear reports from an attorney standpoint regarding inspection dates and what should have come into play, and then you have memos that were sent to the tenants about the extra dollars that are needed to shore up the structure of this building. I mean, what are you thinking as far as the legal sense of things is concerned?
Well, I know as a landlord-tenant attorney in New York City that this, you know, we have our regulatory system is very, very structured, right? So inspection should have happened very much more regularly, right? A 40-year building to not have such type of inspection is egregious. I know that in New York City, the Department of Buildings and HPD have regular inspections, right? I also know that the Florida Bar Association, having seen this issue from this end, has set up a task force to review the condominium laws, which would have happened before this disaster, to make sure that many things are happening, right? That inspections happen regularly going forward. That not only that, that the board, the condo board, actually have enough reserve for repairs so that they're not skimping on repairs, right? And that they actually have enough insurance for these types of disasters going forward. So it's unfortunate that this happened, but the Bar Association in Florida is working on making sure that these things don't happen in the future.
Very troubling. And, you know, you brought up an interesting point, and that is insurance. I mean, what happens in these types of cases where there is not enough paper to kind of cover the possibilities of it all? And, of course, in this case, an absolute disaster here. I mean, what happens in that type of situation as far as liability is concerned?
Well, I'm not an insurance lawyer, but a lot of at this point, there's not enough insurance. What I do know is with 97 victims having passed away, is that there's going to be a pursuit, hopefully not for years, for who can pay, who can compensate the victims. I'll say that in 9/11, there was a precedent in 9/11, the 9/11 fund, wherein the state and the government actually comes in as an excess insurer to make sure that the victims are compensated. So there is precedent for maybe the state of Florida to become an excess insurer with both state, city, and federal aid. So that may be what needs to happen here to make sure the victims are compensated properly.
Altagracia, Pierre Atterbridge. We are talking rights, tenants, litigation. One more thing. We'll switch gears a little bit here, Altagracia. What about the criminal charge aspect of this thing? State officials, inspectors, whoever else was involved. And we're talking negligence here, obviously. Is there any immunity that could shield any of this stuff as far as what could happen here? What about that aspect as far as the immunity?
I'm not a criminal lawyer, so I won't comment on that, but I can get back to you.
Just a sidebar there, maybe, something of that nature, but it's interesting. All right, let's get to what happens within the confines of our own communities, because, there was a story out, a lot of delays, a lot of criticism, and now you have the administration up in Albany. They're sending out the rent relief checks to help tenants and landlords. We're talking about those in arrears, obviously, because of the pandemic. And a lot of people, you got the deadline. You got a looming deadline for some of these renters. The moratorium is what? Altagracia, August 31st here. So you have a lot of legislators warning regarding this check distribution might not be soon enough to prevent, kind of an avalanche of eviction filings. When the state eviction moratorium expires August 31st, and I'm sure you have that deadline in your mindset looming large there. What about that happening right now in New York?
Well, I'll tell you that we get a lot of calls from landlords who are frantic, who are owed $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000. I have a landlord owed $200,000. Tenants are also frantic trying to get to this aid. It's called ELAP. The Emergency Rental Assistance Program. The program is not set up. There are obviously some things that need to be fixed in terms of the application. So everyone's super frantic. The filings for the evictions are happening. It's that the evictions cannot actually happen until the courts reopen. So everyone's frantic, waiting to see what's going to happen. I'll also say that the courts are backlogged. So there is what I call a de facto moratorium, even as the moratorium ends on August 31st, there is a de facto moratorium, which is that the courts are backlogged in terms of cases going before judges and getting warrants. So I think we'll have a longer moratorium than what's actually on paper.
Okay. Do you think you'll have an extension of that August 31st date? Because you read this stuff where the administration, I guess, defending the deliberate rollout, saying they didn't want to replicate, I guess, the delays that marred unemployment disbursements during the pandemic. Do you see that August 31st being extended into September, or no? Is that a firm?
Well, it's been extended a few times. And what I tell our landlord clients is that I don't see evictions being, quote unquote, reopened at the beginning of the school year as children go back to school. I think that's politically incorrect. No one can tell what the governor will do, right, and what the legislature will do. What I'll say is that maybe there is going to be a caveat, some restriction on who can and cannot be evicted. Maybe it'll be restricted as a compromise, right, as to, certain neighborhoods, certain income levels. I'm not sure, but it does look politically incorrect. Is what I tell my clients. We tell our landlord clients to brace themselves for another extension, which may or may not be fair.
Interesting. What about, if you're part of an HOA or POA? If a tenant landlord, let's say, is being sued for closure, can any of those groups legally make a tenant pay the rent instead of the landlord who, let's say, the landlord's in foreclosure? Altagracia, what about that type of situation? Have you come upon that yet? And what happens then?
So if the condo or co-op or HOA would only have a contract with the person who owns, so there would be no way to really get to the person who is the subtenant, right? So the only person you can actually sue or get remedy against is the person you have a contract against. So it would be really the landlord, the person who sublet, who can actually go after, maybe it's the bank, right, who can actually go after the subtenant.
And, of course, I'm assuming that somebody, you know, hasn't missed a rent payment, I guess, for the entirety of the lease. I would think that has to play a role as well. So, and they look at that, right, as far as, you know, if you've been clean, you haven't missed a payment, and then things kind of turn the other side as far as in favor of the rentor, correct?
Correct. I mean, landlords, you know, landlords and tenants both want to work together. Everyone understands that this is a pandemic, it's a catastrophe, it's a disaster, right? So everyone, landlords are lowering rents, lowering arrears, 50%, you know, a percentage of sales to make sure for the commercial tenants, to make sure that the tenant is not, you know, improperly charged. We have cases where the landlord is saying, I'll take a percentage of sales. If your sales have gone down, then that's what we'll take. So both sides are really trying to work together. No one wants to be in this position.
No doubt about it. One last thing. So applicant-wise, and I'm talking about this moratorium, folks, 160,000, give or take, out the Degrassi, the overwhelming bulk of them. You got more than 91,000 in New York City. You have on Long Island, Nassau had applicants of 628. That was at the end of June, that was, and Suffolk County, 233. But do you think overall the process is going to go smooth? You have a lot of these checks now. And listen, you never know with the mail as far as if it gets to these landlords and everything else. But I would imagine your phone is going to be burning up in the next couple of weeks.
Absolutely. It has been. So the process... I don't know what the process will hold. I don't know, but I do think that everyone's trying. The state is trying. This is new for everyone. At some point, landlords will wait for the money. There'll be kinks and we'll work it out. You know, we'll work it out and wait.
No question about it. Very tense situation, I know, for many, because as you know, we're kind of getting to the end of this month. I mean, it's just 30 days, so we'll see what happens. Interesting times, though, on so many fronts right now. Al DeGrassi, Pierre Outerbridge, the founder and the owner of New York City-based the law firm Outerbridge Law, and the focus really on landlord-tenant litigation and some of the transactional matters that accompany it. Al DeGrassi, thanks so much for coming on with us, and we will keep you in mind and talk to you hopefully down the road.
Thank you so much for having me, Jay.
Appreciate it all. There you go. Good information.